Okay, imagine this for a second. You're standing at the base of the Great Pyramids.
Right.
They're ancient, they're perfect. And then someone just walks up to you, hands you a plastic trowel, and says, "Hey, go ahead and renovate those for me. Maybe add a balcony."
That's a nightmare scenario. I'd be absolutely terrified to even touch a single stone. Paralyzed.
Exactly. And that is the terrifying analogy that our source material uses to describe making a sequel to Blade Runner.
Oh, wow.
It's not just making a TV show. It's trying to follow up on a masterpiece without, ruining it.
It really is a task that feels designed to fail. I mean, you have to understand, you're not just making another sci-fi series.
Yeah.
You are comparing every single brick you lay against history. And not just any history. We're talking Ridley Scott's 1982 film, which basically defines cyberpunk.
The whole visual language of it.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
And then you have the Denis Villeneuve sequel in 2049, which, arguably visually perfected it.
It's an incredibly heavy legacy. So Blade Runner 2099 was just born into this world of impossible expectations. But we've got a massive stack of notes, reviews, deep dive analysis here on the new series from Amazon. And the mission for this deep dive is pretty clear.
What's the question?
We need to figure out if this show actually holds up. Does it have a soul of its own? Or is it just, a shadow of the past?
And that is the crucial question. Because when you're dealing with a property this iconic, the risk is you just end up being a greatest hits cover band.
Yeah, you just play the hits.
Throw in some rain, some neon, a Harrison Ford reference, and call it a day.
Yeah.
But what's fascinating here right off the bat is the strategy Amazon took.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't just try to squeeze into the timeline right after Ryan Gosling's character, Kay.
No, they didn't play it safe with the timeline at all. They propelled the whole thing forward. 50 years.
50 years. That's two generations.
Right.
Which I think was the only way to survive. Mm. By jumping to 2099, they escape that immediate shadow of Deckard and Kay.
It gives them breathing room.
Room to breathe, room to build something that isn't beholden to every tiny little continuity thread from the movies. It lets the world evolve.
So let's get into that evolution. Let's look at the world they built. Because, let's be honest, in Blade Runner, the city of Los Angeles.
Oh, it's the main character.
It is. It's often more important than the actual people walking around it.
Absolutely. If the city doesn't feel right, the show fails. Period. Doesn't matter how good the acting is.
And looking at the descriptions we have, the source material uses the word arresting to describe the visuals.
Arresting.
Which is a very specific choice. It's not just beautiful or cool.
No, arresting implies something aggressive, something that, stops you in your tracks. And it looks like they've gone for this very specific aesthetic clash to get there. It's described as a blend of brutalism meeting biotech.
Okay, let's unpack that because that sounds like a total contradiction.
Mm.
Brutalism is, that's massive, blocky concrete structures. Very cold.
Right. Brutalism is dead, it's static, it's all about weight. But biotech, that implies life.
Fluidity. Growth.
Exactly. And the source mentions buildings that have synthetic skins that seem to breathe.
That is delightfully creepy. I'm picturing a skyscraper that sweats.
It's so unsettling, isn't it? But it solves a design problem. I mean, if you just did Future City with flying cars, it'd look generic today.
We've seen it a million times.
We have. But by mixing this necrotic, rotting concrete with this weird, breathing, synthetic layer, they create a sense that the city is simultaneously alive and dying.
It's rotting and growing at the same time.
Yeah. It feels like an ecosystem, not just a set.
And for the tech geeks listening, and I know you're out there, we have to talk about the lighting. Because apparently, the way this show handles light owes a massive debt to gaming technology.
Oh, a huge debt. Specifically, something called ray tracing.
Right.
This is a huge part of its visual identity. So for anyone who isn't deep into graphics rendering, ray tracing is a technique that models the actual physical behavior of light.
So it's not just faking it, it's simulating physics.
It's simulating the physics. Instead of an artist just painting a bright spot on a wall, the computer calculates the path of light as it bounces off surfaces.
So you get those reflections off a puddle that then hit a wall and then hit your eye.
Exactly. And in the show, that's what gives you those specific pink and turquoise neon reflections on wet asphalt that just look real.
Mm-hmm.
And it also handles what's called volumetric fog, that thick, hazy atmosphere that seems to have real weight.
The atmosphere in Blade Runner always looks like you'd need to wash your clothes after just walking through it.
It looks sticky, yeah. It's choking the air. And the contrast, the deep blacks versus the blinding lights, it means every single frame looks like a piece of concept art.
The source actually says you could pause the stream at any second and have a perfect desktop wallpaper.
That's a high bar.
A wildly high bar for a TV show. Usually you pause a show and everyone looks awkward, mouth half open. But here, they're claiming every frame is a painting.
It speaks to the level of care, right?
Mm.
But visuals are only skin deep. We have to look at what's actually happening inside this beautiful, rotting city.
Okay, so let's unpack the society of 2099. Because if you thought things were bleak in the other movies, well, buckle up.
It doesn't get better.
No. It doesn't sound like humanity figured out climate change or wealth inequality in the last 50 years.
Quite the opposite. It's an extrapolation of our worst trends taken to their logical, horrific conclusion.
The seawall in L.A. is higher, which tells you everything about ocean levels. But the social structure is what really stood out to me. The middle class.
Gone.
Just gone. Entirely eradicated.
That is the terrifying part. It's the ultimate haves and have-nots, a strict division. The elite live in orbital stations, literally looking down on the world.
Above the clouds.
And then everyone else is left to rot in the toxic streets below. There is no in-between, no upward mobility.
It effectively creates two different species of human.
Right. And this setting dictates the narrative. The old films, the core tension was usually hunter versus hunted. You know, the Blade Runner chasing the rogue replicant.
It was a detective story. Renoir.
But 2099 seems to be pivoting away from that trope to explore something cerebral. It's all about memory.
Now, memory has always been a huge part of Blade Runner. Deckard's unicorn, Rachel's photos.
Of course.
But how is this different?
The difference is the technology. The show poses the question, are memories real or are they just editable files uploaded by corporations?
That sounds uncomfortably close to where we're heading now with deepfakes and all that.
It really is. It's a fundamental shift in anxiety. In the original, the replicants were desperate for more life, for a past.
They wanted to be real.
They cherished their photos. But here in 2099, the anxiety isn't about having a past. It's about the authenticity of that past. If a corporation can just upload a childhood memory into your brain, how do you know who you are?
So the horror isn't that you're a robot. The horror is that your mind is just a hard drive someone else has admin access to.
Exactly. You can't trust your own nostalgia. It connects to the franchise's DNA, that what is human question. But it expands it for a world where tech has invaded our minds, not just our bodies.
Speaking of bodies and minds, we have to talk about the cast. Because, I mean, the lead is Michelle Yeoh.
A masterstroke in casting.
You could just stop the review there, and I'd be interested.
She just brings this immediate gravitas to anything she's in. You feel her character is important just because it's her.
And she plays Olwen, who is described as an ancient replicant nearing the end of a very extended lifespan.
Which is fascinating, right? Because replicants always had such short lives. Roy Batty's four-year lifespan was the whole tragedy.
The light that burns twice as bright.
It burns half as long, exactly. But here, we have a replicant who's lived a long, long time.
And apparently she's carrying some secret that could just dismantle the whole status quo. But what I love is the description of her performance. Because when you hire Michelle Yeoh, you're kind of expecting.
The action. The martial arts.
You expect motion. But the source describes her performance here as masterfully minimalist.
Oh, I love that.
It says she conveys 100 years of artificial suffering with just a weary glance.
Wow. And that's probably harder to do than the stunts. It's a war of micro expressions. And it just, yeah. It fits the tone. If you've lived for centuries as an artificial being in a world that hates you, you're not going to be doing backflips.
You're tired.
You're tired. You're heavy. And then you have her counterpart, the young, cynical detective.
Right. And here's the contrast. This detective represents the new generation of humans, addicted to neural links. Totally disconnected from physical reality.
So let me get this straight. You have the replicant, the machine, who is weary, soulful, and deeply connected to her history.
Right.
And then you have the human detective, who is basically plugged into the matrix and numb to the world.
It's brilliant irony, isn't it? The replicant is the human-like machine, and the detective is the machine-like human.
That role reversal, yeah. That has to be the engine of the show.
It is. It drives the whole drama. And it forces you, the viewer, to ask, who is actually more human here? The biological entity that's turned itself off or the synthetic one that's forced to feel everything?
And that leads us right into the philosophy of it all, because Blade Runner was never just about cool guns and flying cars.
No, if it was, we wouldn't still be talking about it 40 years later.
And 2099 seems to be tackling this head-on in a way that really resonates with our world right now in 2026. The source brings up a question that's very relevant with the rise of generative AI.
Which is?
If an AI can create art, does it possess a soul?
Oof, yeah, that is the question of the decade, isn't it? We see AI writing poetry, making music, and we ask, is there any ghost in that machine? Or is it just math?
The show takes that anxiety and just cranks it up to 11. It presents this societal inversion that's a sharp critique of where we're all heading.
How so?
In Blade Runner 2099, the replicants. They've become the artists. They're the poets, the philosophers.
And what about the humans?
They've devolved into mindless consumers of content.
Wow. That hits a little too close to home.
It does, doesn't it? We worry about AI taking our jobs, but the show asks, what if it takes our humanity? Hmm. What if they take our drive to create and we're just left scrolling?
Consuming what they build. There's a line from episode 4 the source mentions, and I have to share because it gave me chills just reading it. It says, you humans killed God to become gods yourselves, but you forgot that gods are lonely too.
That is haunting.
Gods are lonely too.
That is the distilled essence of Blade Runner. It captures that melancholy perfectly. The hubris of creating life and then the isolation that comes with it.
It's deep stuff. Mm. But we should probably manage some expectations here. Because when people hear massive budget sci-fi, they might be expecting, I don't know, a Marvel movie.
Right. And this is the big warning. The source is very clear. This is not Marvel pacing. It is not TikTok pacing. If you go in expecting a thrill-a-minute action ride, you are going to be disappointed.
So no rapid-fire editing?
No. It's a slow burn. It leans heavily into neo-noir. The camera lingers on faces. You get wide shots of the skyline that last for minutes.
Minutes. In 2026. That is a bold move.
It is a risk, but the director wants the viewer to breathe the atmosphere. And I think that's vital for this world. You can't feel the oppression of that city if the camera is cutting every 2 seconds.
You have to sit in it.
You have to feel the rain. You have to feel the dread. The suspense isn't who is behind the door. It's who am I? And you can't rush an existential crisis.
Okay, now we're looking at this from our teaking game perspective. So we have to look through the gaming lens. Why does this appeal to gamers specifically?
Well, if you played Cyberpunk 2077, the source says watching the series feels like coming home.
That is high praise. That game's art direction is incredible.
It is. And it's in the details. The gadget design, the holographic UIs, the smart linked weaponry, even the modeling of the spinner cars. It all feels very much like that game's aesthetic.
So the design language of video games is starting to influence prestige TV.
Absolutely. And they mention Deus Ex and Detroit. Become human as well. There's shared DNA there. But beyond just the props, the show is framed as a masterclass in world building for game designers.
How so? What can a game designer learn?
It teaches how to tell a story through the environment without dialogue. You look at a room or a street corner, and the details, the trash, the specific type of neon flickering, it tells you everything about the history of that place.
Environmental storytelling.
Exactly. The holy grail of game design. Showing, not telling. This show apparently does that in every single frame. The world speaks so the characters don't have to.
So it's not just a show. It's a steady guide for world builders.
I think that's a fair way to look at it.
Okay, we've unpacked the legacy, the visuals, the philosophy, the pacing. Let's get to the verdict.
Let's do it. The source material is pretty definitive here. They call it a worthy successor.
Let's do the pros and cons for someone deciding whether to watch.
Okay, on the pro side, visual effects that rival an IMAX movie. Seriously, movie quality stuff. And then there's the score. It's a blend of Vangelis from the original and Hans Zimmer from the sequel.
You can't have Blade Runner without those weeping synths. It just wouldn't work.
It needs that sadness in the music. Mm-hmm. And of course, Michelle Yeoh's performance is a massive pro. Plus, its philosophical relevance. It just feels timely.
And the cons.
The slow pacing could definitely alienate some viewers. If you're not ready to sit and think, you might bounce off it. And the source mentions some side characters lack development. The focus is so tight on the leads that the world can feel a bit populated by NPCs, to use a gaming term.
Fair enough. But the final score they gave it?
A 9.2 out of 10.
Wow.
They label it a modern cyberpunk masterpiece.
9.2. That's a must watch. But there is a caveat on how to watch it. And I think this is really important.
Yes, this is not popcorn TV for scrolling on your phone. You cannot second screen this. If you're on Instagram while it's on, you will miss the whole point.
Lights off, volume up.
full attention. The finale specifically is described as so impactful it will linger in your RAM long after the credits roll.
I love that. Linger in your RAM.
It implies it's taking up processing power in your brain even when you're not actively thinking about it.
So, Blade Runner 2099, heavy, beautiful, and asking the big questions.
It is. It's trying to find a soul in the machine.
And that brings us to the end of this deep dive. But before we go, we want to leave you with something to chew on, something the source material hinted at that really stuck with us.
We talked about replicants being poets and humans being consumers. We talked about a synthetic soul.
Right. So here's the question for you to carry with you. In an age where machines might become the poets and humans just consume, at what point does the simulation of emotion become more real than the feeling itself?
If the machine is the only one expressing the pain of existence and the human is just numb, is the synthetic soul actually the only soul left?
Think about that tonight. Thanks for listening.